The way a person ends up as an adult, his thinking, his moral standards, his behavior, his patterns, his personality and his character all go back to what he was like as a child. That's why it says there in the book of Proverbs, Proverbs the 20th chapter and verse number 11, even a child is known by his doings, whether his work be pure and whether it be right. So what is an adult? An adult is a sum product, the total end result of what he was as a child, what he was allowed to do, what his background was, what his inheritance was, what associations he had, you know, and a lot of other factors all told make up what an adult is. But now I'm directing this sermon this afternoon toward young people. If I would give it a title, I would entitle it, What God's Young People Were Like. What God's young people were like. Now, as I say, I may be including some adults in this, but let's keep in mind that adult is the sum total of what his childhood was like, and so he's been formed and shaped, and he's the end result of what he was like as a child. And the matter of youth and young people is a very important matter in the sight of God, because as you read here in Psalm 45, verse number 16, instead of thy fathers, here we're talking about a time period now when the government is going to be in the right, in the proper hands, and it says here, instead of thy fathers, they're not going to rule any longer, instead of thy fathers shall be thy children, whom thou mayest make princes in all the earth. So it's talking about a time period in the millennium, no doubt, when the children of those heirs who are qualified to enter God's kingdom will be made princes on the earth. Well, I can tell you this, they'll only be princes if they're qualified to be princes and if they understand what they should be as children. Because if they understand what they're supposed to be as children, they'll be forming a character pattern and a habit that'll make them that way when they're adults. It's that simple. Now let's notice a couple of other psalms here. The Bible emphasizes the blessing and importance of children. You read here in Psalm 127, verse number 3, Lo, children are the heritage of the Lord. Actually, most adults probably don't think in this manner, but when you become married and you become an adult and you become a parent, you actually are a partner in God with creation. You are a part of God. You're a partner of God in creation. That's why he says, in other words, children who are created are God's heritage. And you as an adult have participated in creating something that God has enjoined and God is looking forward someday to being in his kingdom. So you're actually a partner with God in creation. The only question is, what is this creation going to turn out to be? Is he going to be a child of clay? You know, he's going to be molded and made, you know, the way he is today. And the way he's molded today is the way he's going to be as an adult. And if he hasn't taught any values, if he hasn't taught any principles, if he hasn't taught any character, what's he going to be like when he's an adult? Yes, as it says here, children are the heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward. As arrows are in the hand of a mighty man, so are children of the youth. Happy is the man that has his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but they shall speak with the enemies in the gate. That is to say, if they've been reared properly and they have the right principles and the right standards and the right values, if they don't, boy, I can tell you there are plenty of proverbs that tell about the sorrow that results from undisciplined and unruly children who grew up to be adults in the same manner. Verse 3 of the 128th Psalm says, Thy wife shall be as a fruitful vine by the sides of thine house, thy children like olive plants round about thy table. If there's a proper relationship, and if there's a proper training, and if there's a proper values instilled, and there's a proper example set, you know, and ad infinitum, you know, there are a lot of things involved in parenting. The sad part about it is that most people grow up and they don't even realize there's such a thing as parenting. Or they go to school, you know. Now you can go to school nowadays and take a class in parenting, just like you can take a class in finances and handling your money. And how many youngsters, when they get out of high school and go out and get married or get a job, know how to handle money or rear children based on sitting in a class? You know, I've had to conclude over the years, to a large extent, it's the way the genes fall. How can you have children who can be so diverse and so different in personality and behavioral patterns and thinking and activities and actions and maybe even in some cases character, unless you attribute it to the way the genes fall? There's a lot to that. But nevertheless, there is a responsibility placed upon every adult and every parent to recognize the value of instilling the right values and forming and molding your children so that when they grow up as adults, they'll have some character and they'll be honorable and they can qualify to be princes in the land. So, let's get back to the basic question then that I asked originally when I started this sermon. What were God's young people like in the Bible? Are there some good examples there for us to follow? All right, let's take one point. I can say this, any person who has ever amounted to anything from God's vantage point was a courageous individual. You know, you can read in the New Testament, one of those classes of people that will not be in God's kingdom, it says, are the cowardly. People who are afraid. They don't have any, they're just full of timidity all the time. And they won't step out. And the same is true when it comes to the matter of obeying God and obedience and having to go against the mainstream of population and society. They're afraid to step out. They won't be a rugged individualist. Well, I can tell you this. You go back and you look in the Bible at some of these men of God and some of these heroes, you know. You hear this modern song, "My heroes have always been cowboys." Well, I can tell you this, the real heroes are right here. Now, let's go back here and notice an example here. One of the outstanding young men in the Bible who was anything but cowardly. You can be sure of that. And this was David as a youth. Let's notice it here in 1 Samuel, the 16th chapter. You know, if people evaluate other people and they look on the surface, they look at the appearance of someone and they look at his deportment or they look at the way he talks and the way he handles himself. And just like my wife said, you know, we went over there to Bend and we were at the feast, you know, and she had the opportunity to meet Mr. Cheney there, one of the two partners that owns the end of the Seventh Mountain. He's the one that Mr. Cole and I were making the arrangements with to rent the feast site over there and then for the following year. And he's a real sharp-looking fellow, has a mustache, and he's a smooth talker and everything. And my wife met him, and she walked away, and she said, "You know something?" She said, "If that fellow would have been in the Worldwide Church of God, he'd been an evangelist." That's right. That's what they looked at. They looked at a certain personality, a certain flair, and a certain suaveness and a certain smoothness and glib talking, whatever was involved. And in the end, you know what I learned about all of that? I learned that those who were thought to be something turned out to be nothing. That's why God says here, you know, you want to evaluate the righteous men in the Bible and what God's young people were like. Here's what God says to go by. Notice it here. The Lord said to Samuel. You know, Samuel was sizing up all these sons of Jesse, you know, because he was going to make a decision here as to which one to anoint as a future king. And what did the Lord say to Samuel? This is 1 Samuel 16, verse number 7. "Look not on his countenance, or on the height of his stature." You know, I can imagine when they had this little draftee down there in Camp Walters, Texas, to start a World War I, this little 5-foot tall guy that couldn't even make the paratroopers. He was too small. Wasn't big enough and strong enough to make the paratroopers, but he made the infantry and the army all right. They looked at this little squirt down there, and he was just a little private in an infantry company there. They probably didn't look at him and realize that this guy was going to be the most decorated hero in all World War I, and his name was Audie Murphy. 5 foot tall. That's why God says here, "You'd better not look on the height of his stature, because I have refused him," that is, he says to the other ones previously, "for the Lord sees not as man sees. For man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart." So what God really evaluates a person by is not his appearance. It's his real heart, and his heart is going to display his actions. Now you see, when the youngest came up then, how does it describe the appearance of this young fellow? The youngest son of all. And this is what it says about him in verse 12. 1 Samuel 16, verse 12. "Now he was ruddy." Means he had a nice, you know, reddish, very healthy-looking complexion. "And with a beautiful countenance and goodly to look at. And the Lord said, arise, anoint him, for this is he." Now, even though he did have a very good appearance, all right, he also had something else. And that is that God said he looked on the heart. Now, there were other sons of Jesse, you read the story here, that were bigger, you know, and more powerful and far more impressive. And here was this youth. You know, how old was he? 15, 16 years of age, probably? Probably not much older than that. And that's the one God chose. Because he looked on the heart, and he did not look on the outward appearance. Although, in this particular case, this young man was a handsome young man, though. But now there's something else here that came on the scene a little bit later. You know, I won't relate the whole story to you because this is what this young man was like now. He was a youth, you know, 15, 16 years of age maybe. And here was this big brute standing out there in front of the Israelite armies cursing and reviling God and blaspheming. Now, you remember it says here that when God chose him, what happened? Samuel took the oil, you read here in verse 13 of 1 Samuel 16, and he anointed him in the midst of his brethren, and the Spirit of the Lord came upon David from that day forward. So he was motivated by God's Spirit, and when he saw this Philistine up there cursing and blaspheming and challenging, it just got his goat, if you could use that term. Notice what he said here in verse 26 of 1 Samuel 17. I tell you, he wasn't any little quivering coward. He said, "Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" Here were the greatest fighting men in Israel that were afraid of him. And they wouldn't go out and meet the challenge. And then we read here in verse 32, David said to Saul, "Let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go and fight this Philistine." Now you can imagine what Saul and the fighting men, you know, who had been military commanders and men for years, you know, had worn armor so long that it was just second nature to them. And here was this young kid that tried to put Saul's armor on. It was so heavy he couldn't even use it. They must have been appalled at the gall of this young man, and they wanted to know his credentials. What gives you the right to decide this? Notice what he said here. I want to show you what this youth was like, you know. He tells about a couple of incidents. He said, "When I was keeping my father's sheep, there came out a lion and a bear, and took a lamb out of the flock. And I went after him, and I smote him, and delivered him out of his mouth. And when he arose against me, I caught him by the beard, and smote him, and slew him." I can remember years ago, I was reading about one tribe down in Africa. They do not let any member, any youth of this tribe, become a full warrior unless he engages in combat with a lion. And what they do is, they'll surround a lion, and they'll provoke it. And then these young men have to stand out there with their spears. And when that lion gets close, then they'll have to spear it and kill it. And they wear big heavy shields. And if the lion pounces on them, they fall on the ground. They hold the shield down. And while the lion is trying to maul him, the others close in and kill this lion with their spears. That's how they qualify to be warriors in that tribe. You know, it's not like we do. You know, we can sit back a couple hundred yards away with a high-powered rifle and a scope. And we can pick him off and kill him just like that. And the lion doesn't know what hit him. Now here was a man engaged in hand-to-hand combat, probably with some kind of a club or some sword or weapon, and what does it say? He grabbed him by the beard and he slew him. "Thy servant slew both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing as he has defied the armies of the living God." So you see, when you look at the young men in the Bible, what you find is that men who put principle, they were youths that were growing up, and they put principle above the circumstances. They were rugged individualists, and the principle of the thing was more important than the circumstance. I can say if there's any lack that affects people today, they put the circumstance ahead of principle. And if it's the principle and the circumstance looks bad, they'll compromise the principle just like that. Well, that's not the way God's young people were. Now, I won't relate the rest of the story to you. You know that. He went out against that Philistine with his equipment, just a sling, and I mean he killed him and cut his head off and became the hero of all Israel. But why? Because there was a principle involved here. This man was defying the armies of the living God, and the principle was more important than his own fear or his own life. He was a courageous individual. Now you look in the whole Bible of the men of God and some of the things that they faced, and the circumstances were almost identical. In some cases, they didn't go out and have to fight a giant warrior who had been engaged in combat from his youth, but they had to go against the most powerful political and element of nobility and to give them the truth of God right down the line. And I can tell you this, they did not set well. And some of those men, more than one, laid their life on the line just because they told the truth. We can realize, brethren, you know, here's one example, just briefly. I won't go through the whole book of Ezekiel here to illustrate it, but I think this is sufficient. Ezekiel 2, verse number 6, this is what God said. This is what the men of God had to be. He called this young priest, you know, out of his particular function that he was doing at the time, and he was just a lad, he was just a youth, as he said, and he raised him up. This is what he said to him in Ezekiel 2, verse number 6. Thou son of man, be not afraid of them. Neither be afraid of their words, though briars and thorns be with thee, and thou doest dwell among scorpions. Be not afraid of their words, be not be dismayed by their looks, though they be a rebellious house. Well, it's like the old saying goes, you tell somebody a lie and you'll make them mad, but tell them the truth and they'll be absolutely infuriated. And that's just the way it is. So I can say this, first and foremost, if you look, you know, there are many examples that we can select from the Bible. I just got a few here at random, but this will just give you an idea. You look at the young people who are God's people, and, you know, those young people were already developed, and the pattern was already set for what they were going to be later on in life. Why? Because as a youth, they were this way. They were courageous, and they were individuals. They didn't follow the mob. They didn't care what the mob thought, and they didn't try to copy the rest. I can tell you, that's one of the most important characteristics to someone who's going to be a servant of God and be a proper representative of God. All right, now, let's look at another one. Another one is that they absolutely respected and feared God. These men of the Bible, these young people, and these ones that God was able to use in greater capacities later on in life were all God-fearing men, and they had a fear and respect for God. How many young people do you find in this world today who have any real fear and respect for God? Well, here's an example now. Here's a man that certainly we would say probably came from humble backgrounds. You know, he wasn't a graduate of one of the schools, you know. He wasn't a son of a prophet. He wasn't from a priestly tribe. He was a herdsman. And this is in Amos, the first chapter. Verse 1 of the first chapter, the words of Amos, who was among the herdsmen of Tekoa. So here was a man just selected, you know. God obviously had some reason in choosing him, but he was a herdsman. You know, a shepherd, I suppose. That's the same thing David was in his early life, too. But notice chapter 7. Here's a good example right here of the courage that it took. Because I can tell you this, you'll find examples in the Bible where prophets of God were virtually chased and run down and then taken back and executed for telling the truth. So here now, he was faced with a confrontation here, and notice it in Amos 7, verse number 10. And because he respected and feared God, then that truth of God was more important to him than his own physical life. Amaziah, the priest of Bethel, sent to Jeroboam, king of Israel, saying, Amos has conspired against thee in the midst of the house of Israel. The land is not able to bear all his words. Well, I can remember back in the 60s, I believe it was, when one certain senator was running for the presidency, and it was just about the time back in those days that the broadcast was going out, and it was using a lot of the prophecies and talking about the United States being a cauldron of sin, you know, and evil. And this candidate got right up publicly in front of the whole nation, and he said, America is not a cauldron of sin. Now, there's only one place he could have got that. He didn't like to hear the truth. And so here in this particular case here, Amos was actually accused of a political conspiracy and being disloyal and treasonous against the king. And that was a death sentence. If you didn't say what the king wanted to hear, you could be called treasonous just like that if you didn't agree with him. And so he said he's conspired. For Amos saith, Jeroboam shall die by the sword, and Israel shall surely be led away a captive out of their own land. And Amaziah said unto Amos, O thou seer, go flee away unto the land of Judah, and there eat bread and prophesy there. We don't want you down here in Israel. Go on over to Judah and preach over there. And prophesy no more at Bethel, for it is the king's chapel and it is the king's court. So don't come here, you know, be like somebody in Washington, D.C. telling Congress and the White House, and they'd say, get away from here. We don't want to hear you preaching around Washington anymore. Same idea. Then answered Amos and said to Amaziah, I was no prophet, neither was I a prophet's son, but I was a herdman and a gatherer of sycamore fruit. And the Lord took me as I followed the flock, and the Lord said to me, go prophesy unto my people Israel. Now therefore hear the word of the Lord. Thou sayest, prophesy not against Israel, and drop not thy word against the house of Isaac. Therefore thus saith the Lord, thy wife shall be a harlot in the city, and thy sons and thy daughters shall fall by the sword, and thy land shall be divided by a line, and thou shalt die in a polluted land, and Israel shall surely go into captivity forth of his land. You see, he had a more respect and fear for God than he had for his own physical life. I can tell you this, if somebody's going to be a servant and be one of God's young people, he's going to have to put God first. That's a hard thing to do for a lot of young people. See, God seems to be somewhere way up there, you know, and he's thrown in heaven, and, you know, he's so far away, he doesn't have much influence on us today. You have all these people around you, you know, and they see you, and you see them, and you're worried about what they think, and you know, you're worried about your popularity, whatever the case may be. I can tell you, God couldn't care less about what people think. Now, you find a good example here, clear back in the book of Exodus, the kind of leaders that God wants. And I can tell you this, you can't take a man who's had a past record of lying and thievery, and he's not dependable, and his word isn't any good, and he's a cheater and a two-timer and this type of thing. You'll never take a man like that and put him in an office like this, because God would never, I mean, I'm talking about as far as God's kingdom is concerned and the choices God makes. You'd never find a man like this serving God. This is what the qualifications were. This is Exodus 18, verse 21. Moreover, thou shalt provide out of all the people able men such as fear God. Notice the very first requirement. Such as fear God. So that what God says and what God instructs and what his word tells them is more important than anything else. Fear God, men of truth. Hating covetousness. And place such over them to be rulers of thousands and rulers of hundreds and rulers of fifties and rulers of ten. And let them judge the people at all seasons. Now that's a good example of what God's going to require of anybody that's ever going to serve him. So let's realize, brethren, that there are some very, very pointed examples here in the Bible of God's servants, and let's say the young people, I'll just use the word young people in general, what their qualifications and what their behavioral pattern should be. Now here's another good example right here. We don't know how old Nehemiah was at the time he was given this responsibility. Undoubtedly, he was a man of great ability to begin with. But he was part of the captives, you know, that were led over into Babylon, probably taken there as a youth because the Jews stayed there 70 years. He may have even been born in Babylon. Now all of a sudden he was given the responsibility. He was a very dedicated and sincere young man, you know, really desirous of serving God and seeing the people return to their land. And so he was chosen for that responsibility. Then when he got over there, you know, he's like every leader finds, you know, you can't please all the people all the time. I don't care what you do, there's going to be an element that complains. It's a vocal minority. In this case here, here were people who had done some pretty bad things. Now I want you to notice, he wasn't contending with a small fry, because you go back down here, and what does he say here? Well, I'll read you the background here, because this seems to be typical of this particular race of people anyway. But you read here in Nehemiah 5, there's a great cry against the people and their wives against their brethren, the Jews. For there were that said, we, our sons and our daughters are many, therefore we take up corn for them that we may eat and live. Also, there were that said, we have mortgaged our lands, vineyards, and houses that we might buy corn because of the dearth. There were also that said, we have borrowed money for the king's tribute, and that upon our lands and vineyards. Yet now our flesh is as the flesh of our brethren, our children as their children. Lo, we bring into bondage our sons and our daughters to be servants, and some of our daughters are brought into bondage already. Neither is it in our power to redeem them, for other men have our lands and vineyards. Same old story, isn't it? Anything new under the sun? They just stepped in and took advantage of them and started socking usury to them. Before long, they owned everything they had. Does that sound familiar? There is nothing new under the sun, is there? Now, how did this strike Nehemiah? And I was very angry when I heard their cry. Then I consulted with myself and I rebuked the nobles. Can you imagine that? How many men stand up and rebuke the nobles? You know, here's the big powerful people that were behind it, you know. These weren't the loan sharkers. These were the very nobles and the people that were there calling the shots, and they were not enforcing things properly, and they were taking advantage of the people. And he said, I rebuked the nobles and the rulers. And I said of them, you exact usury, every one of his brother. I can tell you, it takes courage to stand up and tell the truth. And it takes courage even to live the truth. He says, will you even sell your brethren? Well, then you know the rest of the story. They backed down and they obeyed what he told them to do, and they broke away for that period of time at least from doing that. But it's just typical of human nature. Now, here's another example. You know, you can't be a man that's going to stand up and take this kind of a stand at the risk of your own life or whatever is involved here unless you're a man of principle and you feel this is important and you respect and fear God above everything first. Notice it in Nehemiah 13, verse number 15. In those days I saw in Judah some treading wine presses on the Sabbath and bringing in sheaves and lading asses, as also wine, grapes, and figs, and all manner of burdens which they brought into Jerusalem on the Sabbath day. And I testified against them in the day wherein they sold victuals. There dwelt men of Tyre also therein, which brought fish and all manner of ware, and sold on the Sabbath unto the children of Judah and in Jerusalem. Then I contended with the nobles of Judah. Who was he taking this up with? The very people who were responsible and who allowed it. And I said unto them, what evil thing is this you do, and profane the Sabbath day? Did not your fathers thus, and did not our God bring all this evil upon us and upon this city? Yet ye bring more wrath upon Israel by profaning the Sabbath. They didn't have respect and fear for God, but Nehemiah did. And I guess that's just the way it is. People do not have the real respect and fear for God they ought to. And consequently, when it comes to, prophets, when it comes to advantage, their principles go out the door right along with it. So let's just remember another very second important characteristic of the young people of God that God was able to use is they were people who respected and feared God. Now, here's the third thing. They listened to and they believed and respected their parents also. They respected their parents. Which seems to be a decreasing commodity these days. Now let's notice an example here. Here's a young man who was called into the ministry at a very young date in life. And notice what it says here. This is Jeremiah, the first chapter. These are the words of Jeremiah, the son of Hilkiah of the priests that were in Anathoth. So what was he? He was from the priestly family. He was a Levite. So here he was born in a priestly household. His parents were priests, and he himself then was a priest, or certainly destined to be a priest. Why did God call a man like that? Very obviously because the background was there, and the training was there, and the tradition was there, and the inheritance was there, and everything was there for that function and that responsibility. The word of the Lord came to me saying, I want you to notice, here was one of the few men that was destined and called from the womb. Before I formed thee in the belly, I knew thee. Before thou camest forth out of the womb, I sanctified thee. And I ordained thee a prophet unto the nations. Now, why did he do that? Was God taking some kind of a risk? Not at all. Not when he knew the background. He knew the inheritance. He knew the way the child would be reared. He knew the way the whole family tradition was. He knew the way he would respond. He didn't have to worry about some rebel being on his hands. Now you go through the rest of the book of Jeremiah and you'll find out what he went through. He finally begged the king because the king was sympathetic toward him. But the king had all his political forces against him and his hands were about halfway tied. And he begged the king not to send him down that dungeon anymore. because he preached the truth, and they didn't like to hear that the Babylonians were going to destroy Judah and Jerusalem, and so they confined him, and they actually threw him down in a dungeon, and they threw him down in the bottom of a well. And he said, he told the king, he begged him, he said, if you make me go back to that dungeon again, I'll die there. And so the king said, all right. He said, I'll just confine you to the court. And you read what happened. The very day the Babylonians took the city, where did they find Jeremiah? They found him in shackles and chains in the prison. Why? Because he preached the truth. But you're looking at a man here that had the background for it. Not only did he have the background, he had the character. You know, the background is one thing, but the character is something else. Well, of course, he didn't want to do it, but God told him, you know. He said, I'm but a child. You know, how old was he when God told him this? You know, mere youth. How old was he? 14, 15, 16, somewhere in there, a lad, you know. He said, I'm just a child. I can't carry out this responsibility. And the Lord said to him, say not, I am a child. For thou shalt go to all that I shall send thee, and whatsoever I command thee, thou shalt speak. Be not afraid of their faces, for I am with thee to deliver thee, saith the Lord. Now we go through the rest of the book of Jeremiah, and we'll see that God kept that promise. Now here's another example. Let's go to the book of Samuel. Now you can say, well, this little lad, you know, he was too young at the time, maybe to really understand what was going on. And so maybe in that sense, he wasn't really qualified to be listed as a person who listened to and believed his parents. Well, I'll say this. That might be true, but he still listened to the priest, and the principle is the same. And this is Samuel. You know, this is just a marvelous story in itself, how his mother wanted a child so bad. And she went to the temple and she prayed, and the priest thought she was drunk. And when he interrupted her and started accusing her of being drunk, then she poured out her heart as to what was bothering her. And he said, go. He said, I'm confident that God will grant you that answer. And when God granted her that answer, she dedicated that child to God. And that child grew up to be one of the greatest prophets that ever lived, Samuel. And you read later on, when he was in the temple, and he saw the things, he was serving Eli there in the temple, he saw the things that were going wrong. He himself did not compromise with anything. He lived up to that calling and that responsibility. How many young people today could you give a responsibility like that and they'd have enough dedication and zeal that they'd really want to live up to it? You know, it's kind of rather interesting because I don't know how many of you have ever read the book by Booker T. Washington. But Booker T. Washington, you know, wasn't really sure who his father was. He said in his works that it was rumored that he was a white man from a neighboring plantation. That may have been true. But, you know, he said, you look at a white boy that has come from a long family line and tree. He said it's really much easier for him to make something out of himself because he's got a tradition. He's got a family name to live up to, and he's got something he's got to uphold. But he said, if you take somebody like me who didn't even know who his father was, he said, this is a problem with a lot of the Negro people. He said, they don't have anything to uphold. Well, you look here at Samuel, you know, what was he upholding? He was upholding the responsibility his mother had placed on him. He dedicated him to the Lord from his conception. Now, you read about Samuel here. And, you know, it says back in those days, this child, remember when Hannah gave the child to Eli the priest? She said, for this child I prayed, and the Lord has given me my petition, which I ask of him. This is in 1 Samuel 1, 27 and 28. Therefore also I have lent him to the Lord. As long as he lives, he shall be lent to the Lord. And God honored that. Now, you can read here in the rest of the account. I won't go through the whole thing here, but the child, this is 1 Samuel 2 and verse 11, the child did minister unto the Lord before Eli the priest. And yet there were some bad things going on. But that didn't influence him. He went ahead and maintained his integrity. Later on in life, you know, before his death, you know, he said, whose ox have I stolen? Which one of you have I ever wronged? And so, what do you read here? The child grew on and was in favor with both the Lord and with men. And you read in another instance, This is 1 Samuel 3, verse 19. Samuel grew, and the Lord was with him, and did let none of his words fall to the ground. And all Israel, from Dan even to Beersheba, knew that Samuel was established to be a prophet of the Lord. Why? Because I don't read any place in the whole book of Samuel where he ever denigrated his mother or resented his responsibility or his calling. He lived up to what he had been given to do. And he certainly, obviously, had great respect for his mother and even for Eli, in spite of the fact that Eli got old and got careless and no longer cared and took matters in hand like he should have and allowed his own sons to do some very rotten and terrible things. Well, that's just a good example of a young person who's willing to listen. Actually, a part of the whole educational system nowadays is to get a child so he won't listen to his mother, to his parents. It's a part of the values clarification, they call it, and they start working on kids in pre-middle school, and by the time they get them in middle school and high school, they got them pretty well brainwashed to just tune out. Anytime their parents say something to them, just tune out and don't listen to them. They're old fogies, they're old-fashioned. They don't know what's going on, why should I listen to them? I'm young and I'm modern and I'm in the groove, and I'm, they're so far behind. They're so old-fashioned. Isn't that what most of you kids were taught? Very subtly and very cleverly. Well, I can tell you, God's going to turn that around one of these days, and the very people who are responsible for that are going to get their just rewards. But I can tell you, this thing of respecting and minding your parents is as old as the Bible itself, and it is one of the most important principles of a child of God. All right, now point number 4. The young people of God, the young men and the young women of God, did not conform to this world. What does the Bible tell us? Whosoever will be a friend to this world is the enemy of God. You cannot conform to it. You cannot join in its thinking. You cannot embrace its precepts. You cannot accept its lifestyle. You cannot behave and copy all the things this world does and think and do and act the way the world does and be God's friend. You cannot. You're God's enemy if you do. You can be sitting right here in church and be God's enemy. Do you know that? If you're a part of this world and your thinking is in agreement with this world and what its goals and aims are and what makes up to society, you're God's enemy. That's all there is to it. I was reading in the paper this morning that some woman is doing a biography on Frank Sinatra. And she's been going around for the last year or so interviewing his friends, and he's so upset about it, he's instituted a lawsuit to not permit her to publish any kind of a work about him, and he says that in due time he'll clear the record for himself as he sees it. I say this, what's he got to hide? If a person has lived a decent life and a clean life and he's done the very best he could do, why should he have anything to hide over? I would ask the question, what has Frank Sinatra got to hide? Well, I can tell you, if you're conformed to this world and you're going to behave and act the way this world does, there will be plenty you'll want to hide. There will be plenty you'll want to be ashamed of. The one thing the young people and the young men of God did not conform to this world. Now, here's a very good example in the book of Daniel here. This involves Daniel, first of all. And, you can imagine the situation he was in. Because here he was right in the very king's palace, being trained as an official for the government. And they didn't choose Daniel because he was some kind of a sloppy-looking country hick. As it says here, he was chosen for what reason? Children in whom there was no blemish, but well-favored and skillful in all wisdom and cunning and knowledge and understanding science, and such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace. In other words, Daniel was chosen because of his very, very great intellectual capability and his administrative qualifications. And here he was now, right in training, right in the King Babylon's palace. And lo and behold, what's going to happen now? They start serving all of this unclean food. Now, what's he going to do? Is he going to do like a man we know of that recently said, when we're around these kings, we have to eat their food because they're liable to get offended and kick us out? What if Daniel would have said, well, the king's going to get mad and kick me out? Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with a portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Daniel 1 verse 8. That's how important eating the proper foods were to Daniel. Most people today, you know what's a guide for what they eat? Their taste buds. In fact, there was a little article. I didn't get to read it. I'd like to find it and borrow it again. We just didn't have about an article that was going to be in a magazine, but it pointed out you go into a fast food restaurant and you buy a hamburger. And in that hamburger, 25 additives. By the time you eat the hamburger and french fries, there's 25 additives, and 12 of those are harmful to your system. Most young people, you know, they hear me say, you know, don't eat white sugar, don't eat white flour, don't eat these things. Just let it slide off like water off a duck's back, you know. They'll go down and eat that gunk. Go right ahead. It's your life. But I can tell you this, we've done our part in telling you. You don't want to listen, that's your problem. But I can tell you, you realize a gunk that's sold today in the name of food, and just because it isn't pork, doesn't mean it is good for you. Maybe you'll begin to find out and take this thing of eating seriously. You know why people don't take the thing of eating seriously? Because it doesn't affect them immediately. 20 years down the line, though, when it turns into cancer, then they're going to realize maybe they should have listened. But by then, it's too late. If you're going to listen, I can tell you now's the time to listen. So as it says here, now God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. Now, you know the rest of the story here. I won't read it all, but it just shows you his courage, you see. And the eunuch, you know, he was afraid too. He said, what am I going to tell the king? You're not eating all of these king's dainties. And whatever was involved, obviously it must have been unclean food. Maybe food sacrificed to idols, whatever is involved there. But Daniel wouldn't eat it. And the prince of the eunuch said, well, you're going to be skinny and pale, and then I'm going to get my tail in the ringer. That's what he said, basically. Daniel said, don't worry. He said, you try us out. What was it, 10 days? Whatever the period was here, yeah. Prove us now, 10 days. You let us eat what we want to eat for 10 days, and let's see how we look. And what's the story? He looked better after 10 days than he did before. So you see, here was a young man that even under the face of this pressure would not conform. Well, I tell you, that's an outstanding characteristic. Now you can go one step further here, and here are the three, you know, what's often referred to as the three children, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And what did they face? They faced death. Because when Nebuchadnezzar put up this image, this big golden image, here were these four lads that were taken into the very court to train to be advisors in the court of Babylon, at Nebuchadnezzar's court. There was Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three would not bow in front of this idol. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, these men, O king, this is what all the troublemakers said. They have not regarded thee. They serve not thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. This is in Daniel 3, verse 13, verses 12 and 13. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in his rage and fury, commanded to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They'd already resolved in their minds, you know, they'd already counted the price, they'd already decided what was going to take place, regardless of what the king said, they'd already made up their minds what they were going to do. If it be so, they said, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thy hand, O king. He's able to do it, they said, but if he doesn't choose to do so, then let it never be said that we will serve any of your gods nor worship the golden image which you've set up. I mean, they laid it on the line. Now it was in God's hands to decide. Well, we know the story. They looked down there in the fiery furnace, and I mean, there wasn't even a hair of their head singed. Their clothing didn't even smell like it was burned. And when the guards went over there closer, the flames had killed them even. So you see why? Because they would not conform. You know, the easiest thing in the world to do is to conform. People love to conform. Somehow they feel safety if there's a large number. But that's not the way God's young people were. You can be sure of that. All right, now the last point is that the young men and the young women of God You know, God's young heroes, if you want to call them that, they were faithful to what they knew was right. They when they were convinced and they knew something was right, they were faithful to it. Now let's notice a few examples here. Here's one back in the book of Genesis. I won't dwell on it because I covered it in a sermon just recently, but this was a case of Joseph being constantly accosted by this Potiphar's wife. Now you can just imagine what the average young man would do today if he were in similar circumstances. It's like the old saying goes, you know, the average American male, he can resist anything but temptation. And I mean, this young man had enough conviction. I mean, he had enough truth when the basic question came right up. What did he say? When he answered that woman, he said, "There is none greater in this house than I. Your husband has not kept anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" That's right. It was a wickedness and it was a sin against God, and he knew it. And he did not compromise. Well, sure, he may have paid a price for it. He did. He spent, 3 years in prison for it. An innocent man was sent to prison for 3 years for doing the right thing. But in the end, what did he get? He became the prime minister of all of Egypt, and he delivered the entire nation of Israel. And later on in life, when he met his other brothers, and they now acknowledged the fact that they had done this terrible deed in selling him into slavery in Egypt, he said, "I don't hold it against you." He said, "This was God's doing." I can tell you, the young men and the young women in the Bible were people who lived up to what they believed. Now here's a couple of passages from the New Testament let's look at here. First of all, 2 Timothy 3. This is another example which demonstrates the importance of learning things when you're young. Here Paul is writing Timothy in two instances here, once in 2 Timothy the 3rd chapter, and then we'll go over to the 1st chapter. But in the 3rd chapter, notice what he says to Timothy. He said in 2 Timothy 3:15, "That thou from a child has known the holy scriptures, which are able to make thee wise to salvation through faith, which is in Christ Jesus." So here this young man had been reared, you know, by, as he says here in 2 Timothy 1 verse 5, "When I called remembrance," Paul says, "the unfeigned love that is in thee, which dwelt first in thy grandmother Lois, and in thy mother Eunice." So here was a grandmother and here were a mother that were very instrumental in the life of this young man who was half Jew and half Greek, and who later then converted and became one of the most important servants of Paul in Paul's ministry. Did he live up to what he had been taught as a child? Absolutely. You know, you can find all kinds of people who are doing things that are just rotten, terrible acts of one kind or another. And you know, they're doing it in their folly and they're doing it in their ignorance. They don't know any better. They've never been taught. What about somebody that has been taught though and knows? How does God view them? You know what the Bible says? The Bible says that that man that knew to do his Lord's will and did not do it shall be beaten with many stripes. And the man that did not know the Lord's will and did those things that are worthy of stripes shall be beaten with few stripes. In other words, you're going to be held accountable to what you know. And if you've been reared in the truth, then there's no excuse for doing things that are rotten and evil when people in this world are just heathenish in their conduct and in their behavior. And they're just as ignorant in their folly, they don't know right from wrong, and they just live like animals. And people who know better, how is God going to judge them? Now in 2 John the 4th chapter, John puts it here, he ran into some children of this beloved lady. This lady to whom he wrote, no one really knows who she was. Some think it's a lady, some think it's a church, some think it's one thing or other, but I think the indication is he's probably writing a lady that he had known many years in the church. Notice what he said here. He said in verse 4, this is 2 John 4, "I rejoice greatly that I found of thy children walking in truth, as we have received a commandment from the Father." So he was overjoyed, you know, down the line. Here were this woman's children living and carrying it out themselves. And it was a great joy to him. All right, those are just a few examples of what God's young people were like. And I think there's some valuable lessons there that we can all profit and learn by. Certainly they were all courageous individuals. They weren't afraid. You know, as the Bible says, if God's with me, who can really be against me? Furthermore, they had a respect and a fear for God. And when it came to a matter of upholding the truth of God, they did that. Also, they were respectful and they listened to and believed their parents. They didn't look on their parents as a bunch of old fogies, you know, way behind times, and they're in the modern set now and they know a lot more than their parents know. Furthermore, they refused to conform to society. You know, maybe they didn't know the scripture that said, whosoever will be a friend of this world is the enemy of God, but they certainly knew the principle. I mean, this world has ever been evil and contrary to God, and it's the same way today it's always been. And those who are the children of God and are called out do not conform to this world. And lastly, they were certainly faithful to what they knew was right. There, brethren, is a good synopsis, I believe, of those who truly were the young people of God.